You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 304.
On today's show, we talk about the Roman baths in Bath, England.
Let's dig a little deeper, hopefully find some, you know, five-star worthy Roman stuff.
Curse tablets.
Curse tablets?
Yeah.
Curse tablets. I'm going to write a curse tablet on you right now.
On me? What?
Welcome to the show, everybody.
Hello.
So, still in the Pacific Northwest?
We're still here, although I am only here for a little bit longer, and then I am taking off for the month.
That's right.
To warmer pastures.
Hopefully you're not a pasture.
Is that warmer? Is warmer pastures? They're greener, but can they also be warmer?
I mean, if they're green, they probably are warm.
Yeah.
But I'm also in pastures.
You are. Yours are also green. So,
but this is a dumb conversation.
But I am going to a warmer place. I'm off to North Carolina to see family and, family stuff. And then you're going to join me later on.
Yeah. So we're shipping you off to Charlotte, and I'm staying in the Pacific Northwest until we meet up at the end of the month.
Yep.
So if anybody's in Washington State for the next few weeks, let me know. You know, hey,
what are you going to have a meet up without me?
We'll meet up and have a TAS meet up. So, yeah.
Why are you meeting up without me?
Because you're not going to be there.
Wait till I'm gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mentioned we were going to be in Oregon. Nobody said anything.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still in Oregon for another week.
Yep. But
yeah. Anyway. So, but this week we are talking about Bath. I do have to mention we have some cool episodes coming up the next couple of weeks. We're going to do another timelines episode.
I know, we're bringing it back.
Yeah, I planned one.
The dusty archives where it's sort of lived.
If you're new to the show, I'm not going to tell you what we're going to talk about, but if you're new to the show, a timelines episode is where we take something that's relatively well known that we think most people in the world know about. We talk about that first in the first segment.
Yeah.
Some sort of culture, site, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about two other things that may be a little less well known. You may have heard of it, but it may be a little less well known.
That were happening at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah. That's why we call it timelines, because we think it's cool to look at what is happening at the same time in different places around the world.
Yeah, it's cool.
Especially when it's a really well-known thing that's going on. It's
that's the whole point.
What else was happening? There were other things besides, you know, Stonehenge or whatever.
Well, and that's a good example. Yeah. Like, we could do a Stonehenge.
We did.
We've probably done that.
Yeah, I think we did do Stonehenge.
But it's like, yes, we know about Stonehenge. Now, that's a bad example, actually, because it's like 5,000 years. A lot of stuff happened in that time.
Yeah.
But, like, you've got a thing that we know about, but other people were doing things at the same time that were also cool, but maybe didn't get enough airtime. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, something that might actually fit that bill is about what we're about to talk about, because unless you've probably been to England, or, you know, you're just a little bit more maybe well-traveled or something, or well-scholared.
Or you've read any Jane Austen novels, or really any of the, like, Georgian Edwardian romance novels that are out there these days.
I still think this one is a little bit more on the people generally probably haven't heard of it unless they're reading the right things.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
But this is a city in Western England. It was right south of where we were living for a little while, just a month ago.
Just on the very edge of the Cotswolds.
Right.
On the south edge of the Cotswolds.
And it's called Bath.
Yes.
Gets its name from the hot springs there, but it's called Bath. It's got the Roman baths there.
Yes. But I don't know if everybody knows this, but the city is called Bath, of course, and it's a vibrant, you know, English city. But the downtown area is a little bit built around these Roman baths that are actually from Roman times. And it's a really cool, like, bit of Roman presence that you have in England.
Yeah. All right. So a little bit of history about Bath here. So there's a lot that goes in here. People have been living here for a long time. But one of the more common myths about some of the origins of this place kind of go back to this story from 863 BC of this Celtic prince named Bleded, who is the father of King Lear of Shakespearean fame.
Mm-hmm.
And the rumor is, or the myth is, I guess, the story goes, that he discovered these very hot springs. And then he had these pigs that suffered from this skin disease.
Like leprosy.
Yeah, and they wallowed in the warm mud and were miraculously cured, right? People have been cured from hot springs and the minerals in hot springs for centuries, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, there's hot springs just south of Reno that have claimed this. So Mark Twain went to those.
Oh, they always say that a hot spring can cure stuff. Yeah.
So there's all these minerals in there. People have been cured all over the place. Yeah. Right. But even Darwin went to hot springs to get cured by his.
Well, he came here to Bath. Pretty sure.
Oh, did he go to Bath?
I think so.
Was it Bath he went to?
Well, I mean, he's British, and all the Brits go to Bath to get cured of.
Yeah, well,
especially in like 1700s and 1800s.
The British should probably take more baths. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so, but could there be a kernel of truth to this story? Did the Celtic people have therapeutic remedies here?
Well, yeah, maybe. But from what I understand, that story comes from a history of the a British history book that was written by Geoffrey of Monmouth, like a long time ago, like medieval times ish. Right.
Right. Right.
And basically most of that book was made up, and this story is part of that book, and it's probably all just made up. But I think what remains true is the idea that these hot springs could cure things, regardless of whether the specifics of the legend are true or not.
Sure.
People believed that this miraculous hot water bubbling up from the earth for no apparent reason could cure stuff. So,
yeah.
And it seems like people in prehistory who encountered it would have probably had the same idea as well.
Yeah. I'm thinking, just as a little side story here, that yes, there probably are minerals in various hot springs that can probably give you some sort of curative effect on certain things, but I'm probably guessing also just like
being clean,
taking a hot bath for the first time in your life,
right?
Probably had some curative effects on some things, right?
Right.
And probably going back time after again and taking more baths than you probably normally would take in your life.
Yeah.
At that time,
right,
was probably also just being more clean.
Well, the whole like wellness idea around the sort of like spa aspect of it, and we'll talk about how elaborate the Roman buildings became, because it became like a whole thing around this one hot spring. And it's just like a whole like wellness idea. And so when people are really invested in feeling good, even though it's through means that aren't necessarily like real, but like cleaning yourself and working out and all of the things that the Romans did just would have promoted good health.
Right.
So it just makes sense that they felt like there was wellness properties coming from the spring water.
So 1,000 years later, then this story took place, 2,000 years ago in the first century AD, well, 1,900 years ago, give or take.
Yeah.
The Romans basically had a conquest of Britain.
Enter Rome.
Enter Rome.
Enter Rome.
Right.
Into Britain, physically. Yes.
This is the Roman layer that a lot of Britons like to dig through and chuck out all the Roman pottery.
Oh, please. Yeah. They love finding Roman stuff there.
I mean, but you listen to, like, I remember listening to, like, the Archaeo Animals podcast, and they'd be like, so get through the Roman layer.
Get through
layer.
The Romans.
Yeah.
Well, that's how prehistorians always are. They, like, they want to get to the stuff that's older than that. So.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were really looking for natural resources, trying to, you know, really just exploit and find things they could take back to Rome and, you know, figure what was going out. But they established a settlement here, and they eventually named it Aqua Sulis, literally the waters of Sulis. Sulis was a cultic deity.
Yep.
And this was an early example, actually, of cultural integration.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. So Sulis was a Celtic god. And they're like, okay, cool. So we'll name this hot spring after your god. Maybe it was trying to promote like sharing of the space or whatever. Because it clearly, obviously, it was important. You know, like they all like to take the waters.
Yeah. Now, Romans are pretty much engineering masters at this point.
Yes.
They built a lot of stuff by this time.
Uh-huh.
And aside from.
Apart from.
Now, Rick, I got to say, I wish this were a video podcast at this moment. Because Rachel.
Did I just prompt you with my eyeballs?
Rachel is looking sideways at me and making me say the word aqueducts and roads. Because apart from the aqueducts, the roads, and the, what is it? The Colosseums. What have the Romans ever done for us? Well, I'll tell you what the Romans have done for us.
So what the Romans did specifically in this place in England.
They built
the baths. I definitely like triggered you with my eyeballs right
you
there.
Definitely
well,
did.
I like paused and waited because I was like, "This is your like, this is where you always come in with this."
I wasn't
this.
Even thinking about it.
No, you weren't.
No, I wasn't. Well, yeah. Okay. Anyway, well, anyway, the Romans weren't going to bathe in little like mud puddles.
Obviously no, not.
Obviously
they were
not.
Far more, you know, classy than
they,
that.
They constructed incredibly sophisticated and complex bathing pools.
Yes.
Yeah,
they did.
Because they wanted. They wanted some luxury here, and they wanted something that was going to be clean and sophisticated and at different temperatures, too, which was really cool. They built the hot caldarium, the warm tepidarium, and the cool frigidarium.
Frigidarium. Right? I love that.
I know. I think that's where Frigidaire gets its name. The Frigidarium.
Maybe. That would make sense.
That would be really cool.
They even had...
I made that up completely, by the way. Don't hold me to that.
No, but it would make sense, right?
It would make sense. Yeah. They even had a steam room.
Yeah. They had a steam room, a laconicum, a large open-air swimming pool, which was called the Natatio. And they had a whole plumbing system, basically for heating the floors and water, which was one of my favorite parts of experiencing Bath. And we'll talk about that when we get to what we actually experienced. But they had this really cool way of trapping air between the floors to warm the floors and warm the rooms. It was just really ingenious. Yeah, so
they called that the Hippocast system.
Yeah. So awesome. So like they clearly like figured out engineering wise how to use the heat and the water to make this whole like spa environment. So cool. It makes you want to go back and experience it. I'm sure it would have been amazing in Roman times.
Yeah. The other cool thing about this was it wasn't just for bathing and the baths and all that stuff, because they did actually bathe here, you know, and it was a, we'll talk about this in segment two, but it wasn't just for like fancy Romans. It was for basically everybody.
Yeah.
But it was also a religious center. And this is where the Temple of Sulis Minerva comes in. Sulis Minerva. This was a, like I said, a significant religious center, and it was right next to the baths, so this grand temple, and there's not much left of it today. When you go to Bath, they have a really good like sort of visual reconstruction, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, we will get to that. That was the best part. But they archaeological excavations have unearthed a bunch of like offerings, coins, jewelry, even curses and or curse tablets, as they're called, which we can get into. They're probably the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So what it seems like is people were going to the baths, right? And they would go in and make these offerings at the temple, either before, during, after, whatever the process was. And that's where these votive offerings can come into play. And so there was a religious component here too, or a sacred component to it. They're talking to the gods and also, you know, washing or working out or whatever it was that they were doing. So, yeah. Now, the Roman Empire, of course, declined and eventually left Britain around the 5th century CE. And of course that, you know, caused change in the area. It meant that this sophisticated bathing complex kind of fell into disuse. Of course, that's what happens. And then and the people left the area too. It just was a much smaller settlement. The Romans were gone and the local people didn't occupy it in the same way that the Romans did. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you move forward in time into like the medieval period in England, and this became important again as a Bath Abbey, they called it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it became an abbey.
Yeah, again, we'll talk about this, but we didn't get to see Bath Abbey. We just didn't get to go inside of it. But,
right.
Yeah.
Now, the actual bath was used again, but it's actually kind of interesting because you can see these, how it flooded a little higher, and they actually had these rings around the wall that were still there where people would use the rings to kind of float around, and the water is much lower today, and it's back to like Roman times. But when it was used in the Abbey times, the water was much higher.
It's all crazy.
They weren't controlling
the water level the way they did in both Roman times and also the way they do today. So,
Yeah. So the Romans actually controlled it a little better than, you know,
than the medieval times.
Yeah. So during the Bath Abbey times, the springs were recognized for their therapeutic properties a little more.
Yeah.
Back like they were in Roman times.
Which makes perfect sense because it leads into basically like the golden age of Bath, right?
Yeah.
And this is what I was talking about with like Bath being known as a place for elite members of society to go and take the waters, you know?
Right.
And they would go to these established places, like I think the pump house is one of them, or the pump room. They'd go to the pump room and take the waters, and it was like a social place where they were mingling with the other elite members of the class, but they were also taking the waters. I'm still not quite sure exactly what that meant in Georgian times.
It just meant getting in the water.
I guess so. Yeah. There must have
been their phrase for it.
Yeah. But it was more of a social experience is what it sounds like to me. And like Jane Austen lived there for a time, and Bath appears in at least a couple of her novels, if not all of them at some point or another. So it was just like a really important part of the aristocracy of England in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Oh, and the architecture at that time, too, which we'll get into more of that because we did go walk around and see the cool architecture. But the city is so interesting because there's such a heavy, like, Georgian influence in the buildings that were built in this time period. And you can, it's like a perfect example of that style of architecture.
you can still walk around and see it today. It's really, really beautiful. This is the Royal Crescent, mm-hmm. the circus, and places like that, which we'll talk about more in segment two.
Yeah, it was during the Georgian times when this was flourishing and then into the 1800s that they started actually making some archaeological discoveries and kind of refinding the original Roman baths.
Yeah.
Because they built this up as like this whole Georgian thing, but then they started kind of, like I said, rediscovering the Roman past of it that had sort of been buried, literally buried through time.
Yeah. And like, while they knew that the Romans were there, I don't think there was a lot of interest before this time in like uncovering the structures that the Romans used. But as soon as people in this time period started looking, they were like, oh, hey, look at this. We've got the remains of a, you know, this Roman bath area and all of the surrounding structures. And to the point where they actually like even used the base structures of those to like build on top of it. And so you have this mixture of both like, you know, 17th and 18th century English architecture on top of like Roman architecture. It's this really cool mixture, which
Well, and they have rebuilt some of the Roman architecture just to demonstrate too.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah. Which some people haven't appreciated, as we'll find out in segment three.
I know, that was so funny. And when we talk about one-star reviews.
Oh yeah, we are. Because I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But anyway, now it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So if anybody's heard of it, it's probably because of that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, if you don't live there, obviously, or have been traveling in the area or read about it, but
I'm telling you, if you are, if you took any classes in school and like read any Jane Austen novels, you know where Bath is. You know, you've heard of Taking the Waters because that's like such a big part of those novels.
For sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of a quick and dirty history. It's kind of, well, quick and clean history of Bath. Yeah,
very clean.
So next we're going to talk about our visit there because we were basically on our way from the Cotswolds to Brighton and we...
It's not on the way at all, but we made it on the way because we wanted to.
Yeah, we made it on the way. And we'll talk about the journey of getting there and how you shouldn't park in the town of Bath a little bit.
Yeah,
so we'll a little bit of a pro tip on that one.
Yep, we'll give you some tourist tips.
Yeah, and our trip around there and what we learned and our just our experience of doing that. So we'll do that on the other side of the break. Back in a minute. Welcome back to episode 304, where we take a bath. In Bath. Although you can't take a bath anymore.
You cannot.
No.
You could up until like the 70s, I think they said, right? And then like some kid got something and they shut that down.
Kids ruin everything.
I think parasites ruin everything.
Come on.
Like not kids so much. It could have been like, anybody.
But for like 3,000 years, nobody died.
I don't know about that. That is not, I would not say that is true.
Probably not true.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it was unfortunate that the baths were actually lower than they usually are.
I know. I was so annoyed by that because we could have gone to Bath like any day that we were in the Cotswolds, but we were like, oh, we'll just wait until our last day there and do it on the way to Brighton, which is not really on the way, but we had 4 hours to kill in between Airbnbs. So we're like, perfect, let's do it. And that day they had partially drained the main bath. So like you've got the stairs that go into the main pool and it was drained down to like the bottom step rather than the top, which is where it would normally be, the water level.
Which you can see for the first time. I shared from my Ray-Ban Meta glasses. I didn't know I could do that. And I did an Instagram live from there. I know I promise sharing photos to Instagram. I'm probably going to stop doing that because I never do.
Definitely going
to
do it.
Yeah, I keep forgetting to do that. But I did do a live from there using my first-person point of view glasses, which was super cool. I didn't know I could do that. And I had the audio from there as well. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty neat. That is on the ArcPodNet Instagram.
Yeah.
So if you want to go check that out from March 28th, go scroll back a little ways and you can see that. So
yeah, for sure. I'm not on that because I can't do that when there's a lot of people around. It makes me feel weird and awkward. So
yes, Rachel was somewhere else. I was talking to myself.
I'm not part of that video.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But let's talk about first briefly getting to Bath, because we did not park downtown. Downtown's a complete zoo. There's nowhere to park.
There's nowhere to park. But not only that, like they charge there's a surcharge for driving into certain areas in Bath too.
It's a clean city.
They've got a clean air surcharge. And I did not even go down the path of figuring out what that meant and how you paid for it.
Yeah.
I just read online, like, don't even bother trying. You won't get a parking spot.
Right.
It's not worth your time. Just park outside of Bath. And they have these huge parking lots outside of town that the buses pick up at. And then you just, you know, pay your bus fare in and out of town. And the parking part is free. You can park there for free. You pay for the bus route. And yeah, so it was very cheap, just a couple pounds each, I think, to get, you know, one way.
Five US dollars or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it was really easy, right?
Yeah.
Depending on which direction you're coming from, these parking lots are big and they're easy to find and the buses are constantly there. We didn't even have to wait. Like, we parked and walked up and there's already a bus there waiting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely recommend that.
Something that seemed a little confusing to us at first, and maybe that's just how we read some things, but just so you know, this is just a regular city bus route.
Yes, yeah.
And I kind of got the impression, I don't know why, I kind of got the impression this was just a shuttle from this parking lot into a very particular point in Bath. It's not. It's a city bus route. So
it is a city bus route, but the two endpoints are center of Bath and this parking lot.
Yes, but you can get off anywhere,
you can
technically.
Get off. Yeah, yeah,
and,
you can.
And you could probably get on some other place, but you have to tell the bus driver where you're going to get the proper fare. And we were like, we're going to Bath. And he was like, well, where, you know, like, where are you going?
Yeah.
You know, and we were a little confused at first. Right.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, I get it now. This is a bus route. We're going here.
Yeah.
And so, and he, I feel like he was playing with us a little bit, cause we're American and he's like, I know you're tourists. I know you're going to Bath, but just play the game. Tell me where you're going.
Right.
But anyway, just tell him you're going down to, you know, center of Bath, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway. So.
But it was really nice to not have to drive in that city, because the other thing is, because it's such an old city and it was built when, you know, carriages were the main form of transport, the streets are super narrow. There's tons of alleys all over the place. And this will probably always be true, but there was a big construction zone where the bus normally dropped off too, which we wouldn't have even known about.
Mm-hmm.
But the bus just had its detour planned already to get around that. So
Have
we been driving into town, that would have been... Well, they're fine. So
they legit seemed like there was no parking too. I don't like
there's
I was paying attention,
parking, but
yeah, but I was paying attention. I'm like, if we had actually driven the car down here and knew where to pay this like fee for having an engine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know where I would have parked.
No, there's no spots. So
no,
it's not
no
worth
spots.
It. Don't do it.
Yeah. So
take the train too. Like, this is a train ride away from London. It's a really easy like day trip.
Yeah.
In order to prepare for this, because obviously we didn't know what we were getting into, I watched a bunch of YouTube videos, which had great information. And this is how I found, that's how I found out to just park outside of town too.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah. So we took a really comfortable bus ride into town. It was super easy and you can buy your tickets ahead of time if you want. And you should, if you're going on a busy day or at a busy time, because we were there off season and we weren't exactly sure when we were going to get there. I bought them, I think, like the morning that we were going. So I didn't buy them that far ahead of time, but I did get them online just a couple hours ahead of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's worth it because you'll just like zoom right in if you do it that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we did get in pretty quick and because there was nobody there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was actually, I guess, quite a few people there, but I don't know what it is in like super busy times.
There was less people because the Bath was partially drained.
Probably.
So they just did not have as many.
This was like the end of March.
It was the end of March, so it's not tourist time yet, but also the Bath was partially drained.
Yeah.
And they're very clear about that. I just didn't know it until, because I didn't buy the tickets till the day we were going.
Well,
so.
And we had a day to go, and we couldn't like be flexible on that. Like, we went when we went.
Yeah, we could have been more flexible. Had I known, we would have been more flexible. But that's fine.
Yeah,
again,
that's fine.
That was on me. Look ahead of time just to make sure that they're not going to be doing, you know, plumbing repair on the day that you're there.
Plus, the day that we were there, the Abbey was closed.
Yeah, we got really unlucky with that. I really, so there, again, I watched all these really cool YouTube videos to figure out where to go and what to do. And I watched this amazing video of this tour you can take of the Abbey where you actually go all the way up to the very top of one of the towers. And I was like, that looks amazing. It's not even that expensive. And we were going to do it. But yeah, the Abbey was closed for like, I don't know what it was closed for, commencement or something like that. Right?
I don't know. Something like
kind
that.
Of graduation.
Oh, yeah, it was a graduation.
I think it was a graduation that was going on.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, just didn't get to go in. But the pictures from the outside are beautiful.
Yeah. So we went in and they give you this audio tour, which is basically there's no headphones. It's a thing you hang around your neck, which are codes that you punch in. And then you put the code thing up to your ear.
Yeah.
You put the audio player up to your ear and you can change the volume. And it's not like, even if you don't want to put it up to your ear, it's not like you could hear a bunch of people's audio. You had to actually hold it pretty close.
It's like a phone. It's like having a phone in your hand that you would hold it up to your ear when you wanted to hear the whatever the information right. was. And I mean, we're like kind of, you know, we're information people. We like yeah. to, so we listen to most of the spots throughout
right.
the, I guess, museum. Would you call it a museum?
I don't know
museum.
What it was. Yeah. I don't even think it I would call really it a museum. Unique. Yeah, it was because it was a, it's an, it's a site.
Yeah, it's a site. It's an archaeological yeah. site, a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yeah.
And it's got some, it's got the old baths, of course, but it's got some archaeological displays. It has displays.
Yeah.
It's got artifact displays and it's got reconstructions too. So yeah. it's got all of those things. It's really a really interesting place.
Yeah.
But when you first walk in and you grab your audio tour, which we definitely recommend doing, don't bypass mm-hmm. that step. You kind of enter out into like the upper level, which the upper level is where you've got those views looking down on the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
that,
main bath.
Yeah. Yeah. The bath. And that's the Georgian part that you're walking on right there. The stuff that they built in the 1700s and 1800s when it became very popular to go here and experience the baths. So, but it's not Roman. It just, they made it look Roman because yeah. it was like a Roman revival period yeah. back then to make things look Roman. And yeah, so it's not Roman.
Right.
That's okay. It's still beautiful. And it's, you know, a stunning example of architecture from mm-hmm. that time. And walking out on that balcony overlooking the bath below is really just so cool.
Yeah, it was really neat.
Yeah.
And I guess with the water drained down too, you can see the steps leading down into the water.
Yeah.
Where you may not be able to see that as well because the water's kind of green. And mm-hmm. I think it gives you kind of a better view of that probably.
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably see the steps and stuff a little better from an architectural point of view. You can probably see a little better with the water drain down, I would imagine.
You definitely can. You can see how there's yeah. like, I don't know, three, four steps going down in. And you can mm-hmm. see the bottom too, which is all like overgrown with algae or whatever. Cause they don't right. really, they don't maintain it for people to go into it. Cause people don't go into it today.
That's right.
But you could see how if it was maintained in like a really nice smooth surface, it would be really just lovely to use it like a bath.
Well, it makes me wonder too. I think that probably it would be a little bit cleaner. I mean, it's still a little green because that's just the minerals that are in this particular mm-hmm. hot spring. But
yeah.
it probably would be a little bit cleaner if they hadn't shut it off, so to mm-hmm. speak, for maintenance.
Yeah.
Because there is constant water cycling through it.
It's almost like a green-blue color when you yeah. see pictures of it when the water is at the normal.
Yeah.
level. So
yeah, because yeah. there should be constant water cycling through it when the hot spring is continuously running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's kind of gross looking.
Yeah. Honestly. We probably saw it in its slightly grosser period.
Yeah. It's a little sludgy, but yeah. you can see how deep it is, which is.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. And of course there's coins in it.
Yeah.
Because people can't resist not throwing a coin.
Right.
Yeah. Hope your wish came true. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you go around this balcony, right? And
yeah.
then they have this like set up so well for you to really experience
mm-hmm.
the history of the baths. And you can just rush through it and get out to the water if you want to. But we took the time to stop and listen to all the different audio tour guides or whatever as mm-hmm. you went through. And they were so informative and so interesting. They had little reproductions of what it would have looked like when yeah. it was in the Roman times. And they had this really, really awesome, like, arch that they excavated. Not arch, what's that called?
Oh, it was kind of a pinnacle for the roof.
Yeah. For a building, one of the buildings that was there.
Yeah.
And they have this amazing reproduction of it where it's on the wall,
mm-hmm.
but they've projected the image of what it would have looked like if it were complete, because it's in pieces, it's in fragments.
Yeah.
And they have this projection over the top of it of what it would look like complete. So just like so well done. And you've got this really lovely audio that you're listening to as you walk through it. So I really can't say enough good things about how much I enjoyed learning about this place from the audio guide and the exhibits.
They had a lot of really well done video being used to give you an idea of what something would look like in its whole state.
Yeah.
Right? Either A, helping to reconstruct something, a really good use of video, because down inside, not... Yeah, like once you left the main bath area, you kind of went back inside the building because there's a lot yeah. of stuff kind of down deep inside.
Yeah.
Some of the other areas, you know, that really are just like inside the building there.
Yeah.
You know, where it used to be. And they had all these things and they used this video to just basically kind of reconstruct what things looked like and alongside the actual pieces that were left. And it was just so well done. Probably one of the best reconstructions I've ever seen.
It was so cool to see the archaeological remains of something.
Mm-hmm.
There's the pool area. There is like the gym or workout areas.
Mm-hmm.
And these projections of
people doing the things that the Romans would have been doing in those spaces.
Yeah, that's the other cool thing, because when we saw like some of the pools and some of the other things, they actually had actors that they had set up videos where they had, you know, these looping videos of people actually doing things and taking the waters and doing the baths and
getting the massages, because you could, a higher class Roman lady could pay somebody to like rub oils into her body, for example. And there were different spaces that were some for men, some for women, and some were shared and all these different things. And they had these projected reconstructions in all of these spaces. It was just, it made visualizing, because when you see a pile of stones, like, and you're meant to like just imagine what they would have done with that space 2,000 years ago, that can be really, really hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Even for people who have the right context to know what those spaces, you know, mean. It's still really hard to visualize it, but the way they did it with these projections, I just thought was so cool.
Yeah, and being European, they weren't censored, some of them.
No, you got like some naked butts and stuff, but that's how it would have been. Like that's in the ladies' space, the ladies would have just been, you know,
well, and doing their thing. Out of the main bath, that's one of the points that I noted too, is they said it was basically not just for fancy Roman people. It was for basically everybody.
Yeah.
And men,
in the Roman times,
women,
for sure.
In the Roman times. Yeah, down in the Georgian times.
No, that was a different scenario. They didn't really focus on the Georgian use of it so much. It was really more about the Romans and what they were doing.
Yeah, because back in the Roman times, like I said, it wasn't about the fancy Romans. I mean, there were definitely some spaces for sure. But in the main bath, you would have fancy Romans, not fancy Romans, working people, men, women, children. I mean, you would have all kinds of people just out there naked as a jaybird, out there just taking the bath and, you know, literally cleaning themselves from the day's work. Mm-hmm. And there would be people around in these spaces just kind of chilling and playing games and doing whatever they're going to do. And there would be vendors around selling food, you know,
food,
meat on
drinks,
a stick,
whatever
they're going to sell, you know.
Although I do think I read or heard in one of our audio guides that they would have different hours for men versus women.
There was a mix, though, in some cases.
There was a mix sometimes, but I think it depended on who was emperor. Dictates they had for how men and women could share space at that time.
Yeah.
Because Romans were pretty liberal as far as that goes, but they, not all of them and not all of the time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were so impressed by that. And there's like traditional museum stuff too, like displays of artifacts and things like that you would expect to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also like a section where you're walking across sort of a walkway over an archaeological dig, essentially, like a place that they actually excavated and then just like left it as they found it after they excavated it. I can't remember which room that was, but it was one of the rooms. So they've got this really cool mix of different stuff going on there. It was super well done. That UNESCO World Heritage money, man, they put it to good use.
It was really well done.
And the only criticism I would have is that there was almost like too much, because we were just doing one day in the town of Bath. So we did not have an entire afternoon to blow at the Roman baths. We had other things that we were going to do. And also we had a 4-hour drive to get to Brighton from there.
Yeah.
So by the end, I think we were kind of rushing it a little bit because we just didn't expect to spend an entire day there.
Right.
But you absolutely could spend an entire day just reading every sign and listening to every audio guide. It was really cool.
Yeah, we could have spent a lot more time there, really.
We could have. By the end, we were kind of like, okay, this is some rocks. Let's keep moving.
and not only that, but we had a few more things in Bath we wanted to do. That wasn't just the Roman Bath.
Exactly.
And we kind of blew through a couple things.
Yeah.
And then missed a few other things.
Yeah, exactly. And but we had to pick and choose. And I really wanted to see some of the like architecture, like the Georgian architecture.
Yeah, yeah.
And do a little bit of a walking tour around the area. So we did move on pretty quickly. Had we had tickets to see the Abbey as well, I don't think we just wouldn't have time to do any of that.
We'd have to cut this one short.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
plan to just be leisurely, walk around. I sat next to the main bath, the main pool area, and like knit for a little while I was waiting for you to finish what you were doing. So
it is crazy to think that you sat there at the edge of the Roman baths on those steps that have been there for over 2,000 years and knit.
Yeah.
And just to think the number of people that have sat there.
I know. That was like, I really love to take those quiet moments and like really experience a place like that, because you're like, I am a human who is sitting here doing
something that somebody could have done 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they weren't knitting 2,000 years ago, but
I mean, they could have been.
They definitely could have been sitting here relaxing by the side of a pool. So that was that like connection to the people of the past is so important to me in like experiencing these places. So I love that.
Right. If you'd been naked, it would have been authentic.
Yeah, right.
With your feet in the water.
You're really obsessed with the naked piece of this, aren't you?
I'm just saying. They were, you know, no sunscreen.
They were bathing. It's fine.
They had drinks.
There was a roof over the top of it back then, too.
Yeah.
There's not a roof now. That's another interesting
thing.
It's open, air now, but it would have had a roof over it.
Right. Right. Yeah, there were reconstructions of that inside.
Should we talk about the curse tablets really quick?
Because you're fascinated by curse tablets.
I loved the curse tablets so much. I think I read every single one. So like we talked about in segment one, Bath for the Romans wasn't just a place to, you know, clean yourself and socialize.
Yeah.
It was also, you know, a temple for making offerings or whatever. So that was, and again, I really love the way they did this because there is an artifact display in the sort of museum-y part of the experience, but it's really focused, a lot of it is focused on the things that people would have been throwing into the spring. Because they were sending the water into the pool, but there is the main spring area too, which was not used for swimming as much. So people would make offerings there of all different types. And one of the most beautiful ones was this, like, I want to call it like a shawl pin, but maybe like a cape pin. It was like circle with this really beautiful, like, filigree design on the ends.
Right.
And I think it's gold. But the kind of thing that you would, like, you know, make your request or desire or whatever, and then toss this in as an offering. But the other thing that they would do is the curse tablets is they would like actually curse somebody, lay an actual curse across them, write it onto these like metal, like scroll things and like kind of roll
almost,
it up. And
almost like aluminum, but not aluminum,
not
but
aluminum,
something soft.
Something soft, the soft piece of metal that they could carve into,
like pewter almost.
Yeah. And it would be an actual curse, like curse you, blah, 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 for, you know, taking something, curse you neighbor for taking something from my house or something like that.
Yeah. Or like a lover or, you know, something. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like actually like toss that in as like a curse. That just so.
Anybody that had slighted you or done something.
Yeah. The curses were addressed essentially to Sulis Minerva, which we saw her, the bust of her too, or her head or whatever, gilt bronze head that is also on display there. Oh yeah. So here's a great one. This curse tablet is a complaint about the theft of a cloak and a bathing tunic.
Yeah.
Probably from the baths themselves. Like somebody dropped their stuff to go take a nice relaxing bath and came back and they're. And their clothes are gone. I mean, I'd be pretty mad about that too.
I mean, to curse them forever though.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. There's a lot of complaints of like personal possessions from the baths themselves, jewelry, gemstones, money, clothing. I guess it was a problem. Oh yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Anyway, most of the depositors of the tablets who would be the victims of the thefts appear to have been from lower social classes, which completely makes sense when you know what the business model was of the baths. It was a pay-as-you-go model, right?
Yes.
Anybody could go. Anybody could make an offering to the goddess Minerva. Mm-hmm. Anybody could use the waters if they paid the fee to get in.
Right.
But if you wanted to store your belongings somewhere, if you wanted to, have oils rubbed into your body.
Hey, if you want to rent a locker.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of those extra things cost extra money.
Yeah.
So the more money you had, the more you could do and probably the more safe and secure your visit was.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love it. I know we're like going on and on about this place, but it was really such a magical experience.
Yeah. I mean, I did like just some of the other things that I thought was really cool. Going through the different pools, like we mentioned in the beginning that the Romans put together.
Mm-hmm.
The hot pools, the cool pools.
Yes,
But the floors, basically they had people with fires, blowing the hot fires through the raised up floors. So they had these like
stacked up, almost tiles.
Stacked up where they would heat the air below the floor.
Yeah.
And then the air would heat basically the floor itself, which would heat the room. It's kind of like, it's basically a sauna.
Yeah, basically a sauna.
And it really kind of had nothing to do with the baths themselves. It was just part of the experience, like a spa.
Yeah.
It wasn't the, you know, the hot spring or anything that was heating this. This was a sauna experience in one of the rooms.
It was just fire and this
and hot
insulated
air.
Floor space that they could use to heat the room.
Yeah. And you would basically move through the rooms like you would do in a typical, like, really kind of a fancy spa experience, right?
Yeah.
So you would have this hot room. You would go through a steam room kind of thing. You have different temperatures of baths, including, like, cold baths, you know, where they have a cold one that you dip yourselves in. But, man, it was just an interesting concept that they kind of figured all this out 2,000 years ago, and then we're still kind of doing the same thing. Like, we went on a cruise just last December with a bunch of friends of ours, and they had the exact same thing.
Like, much smaller version of it.
Much smaller version, but the same idea was there. They had these actual, like, misty shower things where they were supposed to be at different temperatures with these different, like, aromatherapy things.
Yep.
And also, like, these different, I guess, steam rooms.
Steam rooms at different temperatures.
At different temperatures.
Yeah.
We're still doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm just like, what the hell?
I mean, it feels nice. Like, to be heated and cooled at different temperatures via both air and water, depending on the scenario. Right. It just feels nice. And I think people really liked it back then, and they figured out how to use it, and we're still doing it today.
Yeah.
You know, people be people, right? We say it all the time, but people like what they like.
They do.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other things people would do here is they would drink the water. And because, again, this water is full of particular minerals.
Yes.
And it's supposed to have healing properties. Yep. And some people would actually drink it thinking they're getting healed.
In the Georgian times, like, taking the waters.
Yeah.
I don't know how much drinking of the water was involved, but I think there was some because they had the whole pump room thing.
Right.
Which if you go, we didn't go into the pump room. We just didn't have time to do that. And you need reservations and stuff,
too, I think.
But, like, they have a whole fountain there where you can, like, actually drink the water. And then they had one in the baths too, which is just like water from the spring. Anybody can try it. So
it's not cold.
No,
it's warm.
We tried it. It was warm, like you would think it is from a spring.
Yeah, we drank it.
Like, obviously,
it was pretty gross.
It was gross.
It was almost just gross because it was warm. You don't drink warm water very often.
No,
right?
But it had like a weird minerally flavor. It was not good.
It was not good.
I would not drink that and think that it was making me healthier. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, if you had to drink it, you could probably get used to it, but it had that kind of smell.
Yeah, that hot spring smell.
Yeah.
It wasn't good.
It wasn't awesome.
I definitely would say everybody should try everything once, but you could also bypass that and just know that you're not missing anything.
Yeah.
Just get a little cup of water and take a whiff of it, and like you'll know that you're good.
Yeah. I would say my overall impression of this, having been to, I mean, I don't want to say hundreds, but at least dozens and dozens of museums, and this wasn't a museum. This was a site.
No, it was interactive.
It was interactive.
Yeah.
I mean, they had museum-like displays in some cases, but this was more of a, if you've been to a national park in the United States, or you've been somewhere, you've seen their visitor centers, right? Things like that. This was, I guess, more on par with that, but this was not even that. This was a site with interactive displays. It's almost indescribable.
Yeah.
But it was probably the most well-done educational display that I've ever seen in my life. Because you combine this with not only the actual real things that you're seeing, but the audio was well done because it was interesting and engaging and not too long. Mm-hmm. I can't stand it when you push one of those numbers. And A, there's too many of them. There were a lot. Don't get me wrong.
There was a lot.
But you could could push it. You could get the idea start walking.
Yeah.
Or you could just skip it if you wanted to, right? But also, they weren't like super long.
Yeah.
They weren't 10, 15 minutes.
I was so interested and engaged in the story that in the beginning, I might have skipped some because we were still getting into it. But then by the end, I was like, oh, what's the next number?
Yeah.
Where is it? What is it? What's the next number? Yeah.
And also, it was just like you're down inside the bowels of this thing, and then you're outside, and then you're inside, and you're just like, you want to know more about it. And it was just,
it was very interactive.
It didn't feel like, honestly, it didn't feel like 4 hours went by, to be honest with you.
No, but we were there for at least that long.
We were there for a long time.
Yeah. No, it's very interactive. And I think that's so important in communicating the past to people who live in the present, right? Because it was a different experience. Communicating what that was like is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
We talked about this in our British Museum episode, like how the Parthenon exhibit in the British Museum is set up pretty well, but not perfect.
Not as
and
well
you
as
don't
in Athens.
You don't get the scale, and it's not as good as it is in Athens, where you have the actual thing right there, so you can see the big thing, and then the museum is there, and they've got it on a similar scale. So, like,
I think these people that set up these things have to have a mix between, like a total fail would be you're just reading stuff on plaques, right? Yeah. And then a total win is you're actually immersed in the experience. And, and 99.9% of the time, you can't sit in the Roman bath and have that experience.
Right.
Right? Like, you can't sit in the Parthenon and have that experience. Right. But if you can replicate that as close as you possibly can, and these guys got really close to replicating that.
They did. I felt like I was... As they move you through the exhibits, you feel like you're walking through the, the bath, which was
like you're,
it's what you want to experience.
Yeah,
you know?
you're still doing it as a spectator, and they can't really get around that because they have to move people through it.
Yeah,
but that's where they get you like 90% close, right? Yeah. And you can't ever get that other 10% unless you like work there probably.
Yeah, right.
And they can't ever really bring it back. That would be the recreation. But I think that's where virtual reality is probably going to close that gap later on in the future. But
yeah, it feels like they're kind of treading that line with the way they've got the projections or videos that you can watch. I guess the one video, the one that I'm thinking of that was sort of inside that pool, that was more of a video that you're watching. But the video screen is set
it's
up
right
at
in the middle.
It was set up, so that it looked like people were walking in and out of the
so
pool.
Crazy.
Yeah, they just did such a good job with that.
It was very well done.
Yeah.
It could have been way worse.
Yeah, we've seen way worse for sure.
Well... Not everybody was impressed as we were. And we'll hear about some of those on the other side of the break. So, all right, back in a minute. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 304. And we are talking about Bath. And like I said in the last segment, we had a good time, but not everybody did.
We like super loved it. And then you read the reviews.
Yes. So I know this is kind of a long episode, so we're going to end it on what I hope is
on a low note.
Well, I hope it's a lighthearted note.
It's a funny note because some of these reviews are just like silly. Like, seriously?
Yes. Now, just like Stonehenge, a lot of the one-star reviews are about money. People like paying for doing things. But you know what? There were a lot of staff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of maintenance in something like this, and that has to be paid for.
Okay, British listeners, please, Tilly, Ash, tell me.
Tilly doesn't live in Britain anymore.
That's true, she doesn't. But anyway,
and Ash lives in Scotland.
Is paying for things just like something that British people complain about? Like, is that like you guys get together and you talk about like queuing up and also paying for things?
It's like the crown should just pay for it?
Is that like the stereotype that we just, and it comes out in these reviews? Or what? I don't know. I mean, I guess Americans complain about paying for things too, but I think there's also a certain level of expectation that when you're going to tour anything in this country, you're going to pay for it.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to have to read some one-star reviews about our stuff too.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. When we get there, we've got plans for this country too.
Yeah. All right. So we picked out a few, and these mostly came from Google reviews.
Yeah.
So, and I tried not to pick out some that were just about money.
Yeah.
So,
like other things. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's definitely a bunch of those. But
the first one is probably my favorite. So,
yeah, go ahead and read it. Okay.
Not worth the hype. I was expecting something much more impressive based on the photos I had seen. The baths were small and underwhelming, and the museum was also quite boring.
How could they say that?
I don't know, because they didn't listen.
What were they expecting?
They didn't listen to any of the audio stuff. They blew through it, didn't really pay attention, looked at the...
Like, what did they see if this was a boring museum?
Have they been to a museum? Yeah, that is shocking and so silly.
To me, a boring museum is every other museum.
Right.
When you go into a museum and it's just displays of artifacts that don't even tell you where they came from or what they are.
Disconnected statues and like busts.
My God.
Yeah.
You want to see a boring museum? Go to the archaeology museum in Naples.
Yeah, the Naples one was
rough. That is just a collection of artifacts from Pompeii, basically.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, it's impressive when you see the statues. They're kind of cool. But it's just like, hey, here's a bunch of shit we dug up at Pompeii.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about it.
Right.
Here's a whole glass case full of beads. Great.
Yeah.
Let's see them somewhere. Let's see them in context.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's why this one.
I'm so upset about it.
I know.
I'm mad about it all over again.
I know.
All right.
Okay, do the next one.
Next one. Too expensive for what it is. How much were these tickets? Like,
I don't remember. £20? I don't remember thinking that they were excessive.
No.
Yeah, 20 pounds each, probably, yeah. 25.
Too expensive for what it is. The entry fee is very high, especially considering that you can't even swim in the baths anymore. That's why I wrote this one down.
Yeah.
The museum is also quite small and not very interesting.
Again,
small?
It's just...
It took us four hours.
They just didn't listen. They didn't read things.
When you're going through this thing, and if you follow along the path that they guide you along, I guess if you like jog through it, it'd probably go pretty quick.
But yeah,
I didn't even know where we were half the time.
No,
it wasn't small.
You get immersed in the museum
It twists and turns and goes up and down, and mm-hmm. you don't even know where you're at in the building. I don't know how they could consider it small, to be honest.
This next one is kind of along the same vein. Overrated and overpriced. The baths were very crowded and the water was murky.
It's a hot spring.
Yeah. The museum was also small and not very interesting. I wouldn't recommend it.
Wow.
Don't go learn about the history of this really amazing and important place. Then I guess if you're not interested in that kind of stuff, and of course it's going to be crowded. Pick your time frame. We were there. Now, granted, again, I think I would have taken a few more crowds to have the water level be at its normal level in the bath. But, you know, we were there on the perfect time to just have very few crowds. So pick your timing. Definitely pick your timing if you don't like crowds.
Go ahead and read the next one, too. I'll take the last one.
Okay. Seriously overpriced. Again, with the overpriced. £25. Is that really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting as an historic site, but you could read all about it on any decent local history site. Local?
Well, not any history site. Maybe this one.
Yeah, right. There's not much to make it an exciting experience. If you want to spend £27 to look at some dirty water and old tiles, good luck to you. The statues around the wall of the main bath are all recreations.
Yeah.
God, they just missed the whole point. Of course they're recreations, but they were recreated 200 years ago.
Right.
By people who rediscovered the baths and then started using the baths the way the Romans did. There's such a fascinating history there when you think about it.
Leave it to British people to call 200-year-old statues. Like
modern
garbage.
Recreations.
Modern recreations. Yeah.
Maybe
I get
years
it.
Ago is modern to them. I don't know.
But given where you're at, I understand. But
cultural fusion and fusion across time is one of the most fascinating things to me. I love seeing a group who came so much later on pick up a place and use it the way that the Georgian English people did to the structures left behind by the Romans. Yeah. So I'm all for it. I think it's great.
Right. This last one is probably my favorite. The Roman baths were okay, but they're not Roman. Only the spring and ruins are from 2,000 years ago.
That's wrong. Okay, go on.
The center/columns and statues are actually from the 19th century.
Only the stuff on the upper level, but go on.
Uh-huh. Some capitalist thought to monetize viewing the hot springs for folk from afar, and it continues today. £54 for two people. The audio is also droning. I'd recommend it for the insomniacs. I would have been better to have more visual facts and interaction for visitors, kids.
Oh my God, that is so wrong.
That's hilarious.
And we didn't even talk about the kid component because we aren't kids and don't have kids, but there's a whole audio tour for kids. Specifically, they have
special
their
numbers.
Own special numbers.
Yeah.
And I didn't listen to any of them, but I can only assume that they were just as good as the rest of it. So.
Although I saw adults punching in those numbers. It wasn't very well explained to us.
That they were for kids.
Because I was like, what are these other numbers for? I don't think the guy even told us that.
It was on the main board when you first walked in. So if you missed that, I think the audio all the way through.
I think some people were punching in all the audio.
Well, some people want to hear everything, and that's fine. You do you. Wow. That is just... That person took more time writing that review than they did... doing the tour of the baths. Because if they had, they would have learned that only the upper level of the baths is, and the columns down below. You can see, it's so obvious where the Roman architecture takes over because the rocks are so much more worn and it's just a totally different thing. So you can see where the English stuff ends and the Roman takes over. But wow. 100% disagree. I wish you could disagree with reviews and like clap back, because that one deserves a clap back if I've ever heard one.
I know. All right. Man. Well, I think that's about it for now.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a big one, but obviously we loved it. And to be fair, our opinions on these kind of things are super skewed because we just adore all history and historical sites. And like, yes, we immediately walk into these places and enter nerd phase and read every sign and listen to every audio guide. And well, until, you know, you burn out, you do burn out eventually. But so I guess, you know, take that with a grain of salt. We're going to always love this kind of stuff because it's who we are. But this one was really well done.
Yes, it was. All right. Well, next week we're coming back with a news episode. And then, like we said in the beginning, the week after that, we got a timelines episode.
We do. We so also have a lot potential interviews.
Oh, yeah. So, we're going to slot an interview in depending on when we can get that scheduled, because it's kind of difficult nailing down people. But we might slot that in at some point.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because we want to get some more interviews in, too, because it's always fun to talk to other people who are, you know, working in the field, doing the archaeology thing. So, yeah.
Indeed. Wait, this is an archaeology show?
Yeah. I mean, it was mostly archaeology today. We talked more about the Rome stuff than the...
Romans are archaeology?
We didn't even talk about going to visit all the rest of the town of Bath. Not really.
Well, that's because that wasn't really archaeology.
It's not the Roman baths. It's just the town that sprung up around.
Yeah, that's true.
The baths, you know, 200 years
ago. We didn't talk about the big arches of houses.
No, the house arches are so cool. The house circles.
The house circles. That's fine.
Yeah, look it up. Those iconic pictures. You know what we're talking about.
You probably don't.
Well, they've been in like every historical drama, like TV show you can think of. I'm pretty sure they were in Bridgerton.
I had no idea until we went.
Yeah, see, you just need to do more like historical fiction watching and reading, and then you'll know about these places, and I won't have to tell you.
What have the Roman baths ever done for us?
So much. So much.
All right. See you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at arcpodnet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.